Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be Mike O'Connor, Mike Gregg, and Yanis Janaeus. In this episode, we will first discuss the latest Fulham news, which includes the signing of midfielder Tom Kearney, and also goalkeeper Martin Stekelenburg going on a season-long loan to Southampton. After that, we'll talk about the transfer speculation surrounding the club this week. Lastly, we'll debate a few topics in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, hoping to keep this show around 60 minutes. We might go a little bit over than that, but we'll see how everything goes. We have much to get through, but before we get going talking about Fulham, I want to share some information with you regarding Cottage Talk co-host David Holly. This week, he had two serious surgeries and has come through both of them and is in the process of recovering. He still has one more surgery to go, which we will see him have in about a couple of weeks' time. You know, he has to recover from these two surgeries first, but this is good news. And David, if you're listening, we're thinking of you, and please get better soon. Okay. Let's now bring on my co-host. Looks like we have Yanis on the line and possibly Mr. Gregg first. Yanis, how you doing, my friend? How are you doing, Yanis?
I'm good, sir. I hope all is well there. And a message to Mr. Holly, please keep your mitts off those nurses, okay? Just please behave yourself, honestly. Don't drop your standards.
I will pass on that message. We do have someone else on the line. Would this be, which mic do we have on the line?
That's Mike Gregg, Russ.
Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm very good, and it should be fun with two mics on, and we'll have to see how that goes.
Absolutely. It could get a little confusing, Mike, so I will try to say Mike O'Connor and Mike Gregg, okay, to try to keep you guys apart. And it looks like we have Mike O'Connor on the line. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Not doing too bad there, Russ, and yes, I think we do need to alleviate the name thing for a little bit here.
It should be interesting. It should be fun. And guys, you know, bear with me on that. I'll do my best. But before we get going talking about Fulham, Yanis, I want to ask you something first. I want to ask you guys as well. This is a little bit off topic, but it actually involves Clint Dempsey. I don't know if you saw the news with Clint Dempsey, but I want to get your thoughts on his ban. You know, he got a three match ban from the MLS, and I believe a two-year ban from the U.S. Open Cup for ripping up a referee's notebook. What are your thoughts about this?
I saw the incident. I thought it was bloody brilliant. as players, you know, we've all had contentious calls, and you've wondered if, you know, the referee needs to get a quick appointment with the optician. But he was protesting a teammate that got sent off, and I thought that was a bogus call. And he just thought, bollocks, I've had enough of this. And he grabbed the notebook and started tearing it up and threw it away. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And you know what? I don't think he's going to give a monkeys about the U.S. Gold Cup or whatever the hell it is. It's one of those, you know, it's one of those when he's sitting down in his little wheelchair with his grandkids. He can talk about everything he did, you know, obviously with Fulham Football Club, with the U.S. national team. But he can also, I'm sure, have a chuckle at the fact that he grabbed a ref's notebook and tore it up. I had a good laugh about it.
You know what? I saw that and I watched it several times. And I'm like, did he really actually do that? But
yeah, he did.
I'm sorry, he did it, not do it. He did it. And
did it.
You know, again, it's been a huge topic here. So I'm curious if you had seen it. Obviously, you have. Mike, had you seen the incident, Mike O'Connor first?
I haven't seen the incident, but I read about it. And to be honest with you, I can completely see where Clint Dempsey's coming from. I'm kind of a hothead myself in situations like that. So I think it's brilliant, and I think it's one of those things that when he's getting towards the more senior part of his career, he just doesn't care anymore. He just doesn't care anymore about these simple shows of anger that you're always taught as a young player not to do because it's not professional. But I think that he lost it and completely incorrectly and would have done the same thing. It probably isn't the right thing to do, but I'm a hothead and I can completely see where he's coming from.
Okay.
Yeah.
fair enough with that. Now, how about you, Mike Gregg? What did you think when you heard about the story about Clint Dempsey?
Well, I've only seen the incident where he actually tore it up, so I didn't, it's sort of out of context. I never saw what led up to it or anything else. But I did read a couple of articles where it sort of raised the issue that the refereeing in the MLS could be a bit better. Am I putting that slightly?
Yeah, no,
listen, Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, with the MLS, there's been a couple of articles recently saying, you know, how it's progressing, and while you're still, they're still signing the sort of senior players in their twilight years, it is progressing, but one of the areas it's falling down is in refereeing, and so I found that quite interesting to read, and but to be honest, I can't condone what he did. It's you know, you're being kind to him because he's an ex-Fulham player. If that had been anyone else, you would have been ripping him apart. So he shouldn't have done it, but there you are. And I think the Gold Cup is the equivalent of some Sunday League Cup or something. Is that right?
Yeah, the Watney Cup.
Yeah. It's the, you know, again, it would be like our FA Cup. And these referees were from, you know, again, they weren't, I don't believe they were specifically MLS referees. It all goes under the same umbrella, but regardless, it's you know, it's always been a topic of mine with referees over here. They are getting better, but this is something that again brought the whole issue to the forefront with referees and also you know, the situation with Clint Dempsey is kind of interesting. You bring up a interesting point. If he wasn't a Fulham player, would we be reacting differently to it? And I see where you're going on that, Mike. Very, very interesting take there. All right, guys, let's get going with the show. And let's start with the breaking news from yesterday, I guess you could say, would be the signing of Tom Kearney. He comes to Fulham from Blackburn. And I'll just share with you just some details. He is a midfielder. And he is signed through the summer of 2019, with an option to extend until 2020. And as it says on the Fulham website, this is for an undisclosed fee. I've seen speculation of what exactly it is, but again, I'm just going by what I have seen on the Fulham website. And again, like I mentioned, he is a young player. He is a midfielder. He's only 24 years old. He was their player of the year, Blackburn, in 2013-2014. And Mike Gregg, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about this signing?
Yeah, I'm very pleased with it. I did hear something last weekend that it was done and dusted. It took all week to get finalised, but he's exactly, you know, what we need, along with Pringle coming in. And you look at Christensen as well, Heidman, and suddenly there's a lot of energy, a lot of youth in that midfield. He's going to give us some good passing qualities. But for me, it's all about, it's the age, it's the energy that these players are going to bring, because we've been used to, you know, a very old team and a very slow build-up, and you can see that just the dynamics are changing within that midfield. And there's other things as well. There's the length of the contract. You know, that's shown commitment from the club and from him, you know, to potentially, with an extension, be it to 2020. And then you look at Woodrow's contract extension to 2017, I think, or 18, and you can see what they're trying to do. And so finally we're beginning have a plan, a long-term plan. Now, the plan must be to get promotion this year. I mean, you can't, you know, I don't see it as a 2 or 3 year, you know, really, we've got to get up there as soon as possible. And I see no reason why, you know, we've certainly did the defence being improved. But, you know, that can happen. The league is very average apart from, you know, last year was top eight. And there's not really that massive a difference. I don't agree with people who think it's going to take a huge turnaround to go from where we were to suddenly challenging, and but it's going to need the right players, obviously. But very, very pleased with this signing. One more midfielder, maybe a defensive midfielder, would help us. People talk about wingers. As long as we keep Roberts, I'll be quite happy with keeping every other midfielder, and that gives us the potential to play, you know, with possibly with the three central midfielders and two wide men, which is the way forward, I think, for the coming season. And lots of competition, lots of young players, and, I'm very happy with this signing. And you can tell, you always look at what the opposition fans are saying, and the majority, vast majority were disappointed to see him go, which is always a good sign.
You stole my thunder because I was going to go right back to you, because the reaction from Blackburn supporters is the exact same from Leeds supporters. And when we took away Ross McCormack last year, and that's always a good sign. I'm glad that you brought that up, Mike, because that was the first thing that crossed my mind is was the outrage that that Blackburn supporters have had. Then they're, you know, again, I've seen this all over Twitter. They're downplaying it. You know, you don't realize what you're getting. He's not worth the money. And I think much of that is coming from the fact that they're upset that they're going to be losing this player that, again, was their player of the year just two seasons ago. So it was someone that is very valuable to them, and that's a good sign for us. And, Giannis, I want to get your thoughts on the signing and also what we're just talking about, because, again, I've seen this all over Twitter. Blackburn supporters very upset the fact that Tom Kearney decided to join Fulham.
Well, from a positive note, the money that Venkies are going to be making from this means that it can provide more cheap chicken at Ewood Park. but that aside, you know, I mean, he's got lots of first-team experience, 70 games for Hull, 76 for Blackburn Rovers, so a lot of experience there. He's been capped under 19 and under 21 Scotland. And you're absolutely right. The reaction of the Blackburn fans has been one of angst, although it was the same. It was similar angst when Tunnicliffe returned on loan. But they are different players. I do like Kearney, and Mike's right. It gives us, it shows some intent in terms of the midfield we're going to try and create. I think obviously there are still areas we need to address. The only thing that worries me, and I hate to harp on about it, but I'm going to do it again, is okay. for these signings to work, has to require that the manager utilizes them appropriately. And he's going to have to, I don't know if he listens to this show, but if he does, the one piece of advice I'd give him is formulate a formation around the players you've got as opposed to the players you've got formulating, you know, going around your own formation.
Right.
We're now becoming a young squad, a vibrant squad, playing in a division which isn't easy, but where the pitches are fairly heavy, especially in the dark of winter. And we've got lots of energy for those Tuesday, Wednesday night midweek games on the road. So I like the signing of Kearney. Obviously, there's a number more to come. There's a number more that we've got to be looking forward to. But the signings of Kearney and Pringle and Lonergan are certainly steps in the right direction.
I totally agree with that. And listen, it's funny because, Mike, I'm going to go back to you, Greg, in a few minutes because I want to get your thoughts on how many more players we still need, because you've mentioned to me that we need about five. We now have two and a backup goalkeeper, which I think is a positive sign. And I think we're heading in the right direction. But, Giannis, you bring up a very good point. All the players that we bring in don't mean anything unless they're not played in the proper position, played the right way, and allowed to influence the game. And we're going to have to watch to see how Kit uses them and plays to their strengths and lets them do their job, basically, going back to a Patriots thing. Do your job. Let them do their job. So, again, we're going to have to wait and see how that all plays out. Right. Over to you, Mike O'Connor. What are your thoughts about the signing?
I think Giannis kind of alluded to it very well there, that I think that these are positive signings that show, Mike Gray can them as well, show intent and show we're not just taking in these older loney players anymore that are there to do a job, to fill in a spot and just kind of breathe and be a part of our team. We're bringing in players the right age. They're 21 to 24, still building themselves. They've had championship experience. They've got youthfulness, energy, and some creativity. Creativity you only really get from less experienced players. And what I mean by that is if you look at like a 29, 30-year-old player who's tried all these tricks and different types of plays and through balls and vision, they realize what works and what doesn't half the time, so they kind of shy away from trying that, using that creativity. And so when you get these younger players in that don't have as much experience and they can still envision these kinds of unique, out-of-the-norm kind of plays, maneuvers, and runs, then that's when you start building a team that's really exuberant and really lively and fun to watch. So I think that's somewhere we're going, and I'm really, really excited about it. The key is that we don't stop here. By the end of the season,
right,
we've only signed Pringle and Kearney and have a backup goalkeeper, that I think all of a sudden this transfer season that looks so promising right now turns on its head and we can start to be a little worried. But, you know, let's not talk about that for now. And finally, I think what really is important, and Giannis hit on it, is that we can no longer have a team whose one or two players dictate the formation we play. No more of this diamond because only Ruiz fits in a diamond. No more of this diamond because only certain players can play this way. We need to have a formation and a tactic and a run of play that suits everyone, not just one or two players. And I think that's going to be key to make sure that this team is a unit and runs well as an actual machine. And I think so far so good with the players we've got, and that's kind of what we're building right now.
Okay, great take. Great take by all three of you. And you know what? I'm pretty excited. You know, again, I think that there's so much more work that needs to be done, especially in defense. And, you know, again, we can talk about that a little bit later on when we talk about positions of need that still need to be addressed. And I personally think that the fullbacks and the center backs need to be looked at. But, again, we will talk about that in a little bit. But, Mike, I want to go back to you because, again, this is a twofold question I want to pose to you. First of all, I want to get your thoughts about the midfield now with Pringle and also with the addition of Kearney. How does this work with someone like Ross McCormack? Will this help him a great deal?
Well, yeah, because he's going to, you know, what we saw last year is Ross dropping deep to get the ball because no one was giving it to him. So we've got runners now. You know, if you watch any of the videos of the guys who pulled in or actually saw them last year, you know, they are runners and they're heading towards the 18-yard box where we hope Ross is going to be predominantly most of the games. And, you know, with these players coming in, I never want to see him wide. I never want to see him picking the ball off the centre-back. He has to play right on the shoulder of these defenders and being in about the 18-yard box. So hopefully we're going to bring the best out of him. But the way I see it working is, you know, we've got to... I think they're going to look at last year's teams, how they've done well, and I'm convinced we're going to go with three central midfielders and two wide men and just one striker, and that one striker should be Ross, and, you know, and we have other players available to change the formation at certain times. But that's the way I think we're heading, some kind
okay,
of...
Okay, so you think that they're looking at the, say, Brentford-Bournemouth models and also a team like Watford that really like used their width to you know, with you know, again, one main striker and get the ball to the main striker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be going down the wings. It's going to be runners coming from midfield to...
That's what I want to see, Mike.
Loose balls. Watford were nothing special. They really weren't. You watch them, they got the ball forward quickly with powerful players and got the ball in the box into the danger area. And we didn't do that enough. And I see these lads bringing that into the team. So those expecting to see two up front with Smith or whoever, I don't see it myself. I really don't.
Okay. Very interesting take. Giannis, back to you. What are your thoughts about what Mike just shared, that he thinks potentially we're going to be modeling after teams like Watford and also Bournemouth last season with the addition of these two players?
Well, I do see it because, I mean, they were both high-energy, high-octane teams. We always seem to be a yard behind behind the ball, a yard behind the pace. What I'm thinking about, the Kearney Pringle signings, it's just making me wonder about the status possibly of Scott Parker. Because if they're going to play with three central midfielders, where is Parker going to fit in that role? And I'm wondering if the brass or the powers that be are looking at maybe a younger version of Parker that can supplement Pringle and Kearney. I know that one player that is out there is Jamie O'Hara, and
right.
He's 27, 28 years of age. And you know what? That sort of player would probably help to complement. I mean, I love Scott Parker like most of us do, but he's got so much mileage on his legs. And I'm not overtly convinced that in our starting 11, when we play down in Wales, that he's going to be part of that 11. And I'm wondering if maybe the club's going to look and bring in a younger player to put in Parker's place there. To allow to supplement for Pringle and Kearney. Well, it's all about his energy, Russ. It's about energy.
Right.
And if this does work, it's going to mean that McCormack's going to get a lot more chances.
Absolutely.
I need to see more. I really want to see more runs from deep from the midfield. I think there was a lot of pressure on our strikers to score. The midfield needs to really contribute here. So that's where my thinking is, maybe Scott Parker might at some point be dispensable.
Wow, that's very interesting. And again, he's coming back from surgery. You know,
yeah.
you could read about that on FulhamFC.com. And again, I've seen the video. He is coming back from surgery, so that's an interesting take. And Michael Connor, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on what we're talking about here with the potential of us modeling more after teams that were promoted last season, and also Brentford. Brentford played that way as well a little bit. So what are your thoughts about that? And also what Giannis just brought up with the situation with Scott Parker. Can it work with him if we go to a more high-octane, trying to get the ball, you know, trying to really push forward more with our guys in midfield?
Yeah, we really do need to start modeling ourselves off of teams that have done that, because, I mean, not to, you know, insult anyone who's listening to intelligence or anything like that, but if those teams, they've proven that that's what it takes to be up there in this league and to get promoted or to at least be in the playoffs. You don't, that there's a similar theme between all of these teams, and it's the fact that they are energetic, they make deep runs from the midfield, and they never give up. They just don't just boot the ball up to their forwards to go for it. They don't just do very static movements. They're very fluid, they're very quick-paced, and every player is trying to get in the box or around the box to support their other teammates, and that's what it takes. Unfortunately, going with what Giannis said, to kind of caveat into that, is it takes youth. It takes legs that maybe don't have so much mileage on it. And I love Scott Parker, and I truly think he's a fantastic player. I think he was a fantastic player, still is, and has a great future still in the game when it comes to management and coaching. However, there are too many times where when Scotty gets the ball, he does a few pirouettes and slows the game down. And I think that if you have someone like that all the time, not saying that he doesn't have a piece to our puzzle to get to promotion or something like that, but if you've got a player that constantly kind of slows down the game, that then you're instantly taking away and detracting from what we're bringing in with Pringle and Kearney and all these other youthful, quick-paced players. So it's going to kind of be a balancing act. Yes, do we use him? Absolutely, to change up our rhythm and change up our game. But do we base our game around someone who is a little, you know, he prefers the build-up game rather than the counterattack or the quick movement? I don't think we do anymore. I think we kind of slowly transition away from that, bringing more youth in. And Scott definitely has a place in our team, but maybe not every single game, because he is definitely getting to that point where he just probably can't keep up with some of these guys anymore.
Right. No, very good point there, Mike. Very good point. And, you know, it's interesting to see how this is all going to play out with him. I want him to be a part of the plans for the upcoming season, but do I want him to be starting each and every match? Maybe not. You know, again, maybe use him in spurts. Maybe use him in situations that fit what he can offer and not burn him out through a course of an entire season. So, you know, are these two signings an indication that we're going away from Scott Parker? I don't know. But, Mike Gregg, I'm going to go back to you because, again, before we move on from talking about the midfield, I want to ask you, because I've seen some speculation of Fulham being linked to other midfielders. Do you think maybe we're not done at that position, at this central midfield position?
I think everyone acknowledges we need a ball winner, a central defensive midfielder. And yes, we've been linked with McDonald of Wolves, who's a very good player and ran the show when he played against us last year. And
yes, he did.
I would expect, you know, him to be on the radar, definitely. Well, I know he is. And we'll talk about it later, about stats and everything else. But again, he's one of the best performing players of last year. And, you know, and that seems to be the sort of window we're looking at, those kind of players. And Parker's going to have a role. I see it as a 60-40 role. So be that 60% of the time he's going to play, or 40%. But he's still going to have a lot of games. If there's a game on a Saturday and a game on a Tuesday, I don't think his legs are going to be able to do both games. So we're going to see a bit of rotation. And I was playing around with some lineups this morning, and currently, you know, we've got a lot of options, and I suspect we're going to see, you know, quite a number of team changes to keep things fresh, especially in that front sort of six players. And, you know, where do you fit Heidman in? Where do you fit Christensen?
That's a great question.
You know, the Christensen, for one, everyone, you know, he's got to be a starter. So you start him, you start Kenny, you start Pringle, there's three of your midfield. But I see Parker, you know, another year on him, and he's just going to have to be much more, keep his energy levels throughout the whole game, and he's playing at a certain level and not do those rampaging runs he does. He's just got to sit in front of that back four, give the ball to these young lads and let them run around. And it's really his turn to be the leader and also be honest with the management and say, you know, I'm not up to this game. I'm everything's catching up with me. But we all know what he's like. He's going to want to play, and we're going to have to use him carefully. But he's still going to be an important part of our team coming up.
Listen, I agree with you, but again, I'm going to go right back to it. And a little bonus topic, because I want to work on this and talk about the midfield, because Mike, I want Mike Gregg. I mean, sorry, I keep forgetting we got Mike Gregg and Mike O'Connor. Mike Gregg, I was watching last week LVC play for Denmark. Now he was playing a deeper central role. Could we see him finally have that role with Fulham? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I've seen him play at under 21s level. He's played as the holding man, he's played behind the forwards, and we saw him last year with all the energy that he had, you know, from box to box scoring and all of that. But eventually I see him playing that sort of deeper role, dictating the game from that position, getting the ball, passing it on. So could we play like with two holding midfielders, him and Parker? It could happen, and in a way I hope that we see him settle down in one position this year, and yes, eventually he will be that deeper role. His passing is too good to be, you know, his long range passing is too good to be sort of behind the strikers, really. He needs to be looking at the whole pitch in front of him.
You know what, Mike, I completely agree with you. That's why, you know, again, when we're talking about this, I was really thinking about what his role could turn out to be this season for Fulham. It might be a little bit different than what we saw last season. You said you saw him in the under-21s playing a deeper role. I saw him, like I said, last week playing a deeper role and doing a very nice job at it. And I'm thinking maybe we might see that with Fulham. Giannis, I want to get your thoughts about LVC and how Kit should use him. I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, first and foremost, he starts. I mean, that's an absolute given. He's got to be in there because, you know, he's sheer quality. I also got a chance to watch him play in the under-21s, and I think the deeper role would certainly suit him as well. And again, he has the energy. He certainly has the skill level. His passing is good, and it's improving all the time. And it's just about getting that equilibrium right in the midfield in terms of the balance. And I think one of the things I'm curious to see is how, not so much what's going to happen in the centre midfield in terms of how it rotates itself, it's what's going to happen in terms of your supporting players wide. You know,
right.
How is that going to, are we going to be looking at, is Ruiz going to be gone, or are we going to maybe keeping? We've got potentially Kaká on the left, but we have our other options as well. Let's not forget that Tunnicliffe is still in the equation as well. So the pre-season games that we've got and the training, Kit has to sort of get the balance right, but the most important thing is he has to get his best players in the lineup. Lasse has to be in there, and he has to be in there where he's utilized to the best of his ability. The deeper role looks like it would suit him, and it gives him a little bit more freedom as well, and it gives him a little bit more range. And at the end of the day, what do you want them to do? That you want them to be able to keep it tight at the back, or also support the strikers up front. So Kit's under a lot of pressure here because he has to. I'm sure Kana said, look, I gave you a little bit of fun for a season, but I'm bringing quality players in now, and the fans are expecting. You know, I've had feedback from the fans, and they're not happy, and you need to get it sorted out now. And one of the critical components will be how he sorts this midfield out to create more energy so that we get off to a flyer, to get off to a really quick start, and I think that's where Kit has to get it right.
I totally agree with that, Giannis, and that's why, again, I wanted to go off kilter a little bit and bring up this talk about LVC because I want to see how he actually fits, because I went back and was thinking about how I've watched him recently, like you said, in the under-21s, and how he can be utilized in a deeper role. I thought maybe this is where he should be. So that's why I wanted to pose it to you and Mr. Greg. Now I'm going to go to Mr. O'Connor. Mike, what are your thoughts about all of this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's funny enough, I was been reading some other forums and some other blogs about him and how he's been doing in the under-21s. And there have been a few, I didn't read too much about it, and I've seen him play for Denmark, and there were a few suggesting that he could play a deeper role. And I think the key thing for him in order to do that and be effective is the fact that he is, as we've noted several times throughout last season, he's a little energizer bunny. So if he does play a deeper role, he can go forward, make an attacking run, make an incisive run and passes, and if anything comes of it or doesn't come of it, he has the energy to sprint back and get back to do his defensive duties or whatever else it is that he needs to do. So I think the defensive role truly does, or not even defensive, the deeper role will fit him quite well, because unlike some players that kind of seem to peter out around the 60th, 70th minute doing that kind of stuff, I haven't seen a single game from LVC, bar the first game he came back from injury, where his energy levels really ever dropped. And I think that's the key component with LVC, because he's got the skill, he's got the vision, and the real last limiting factor would be, do you have the energy to not only play deeper and be able to make those passes and see the plays building and see the avenues of approach when players are running into the box, but do you have the energy to make the run yourself if need be to create those chances? And I think he does, and I think he's been showing that against Denmark. So it's very interesting to see if he does play deeper, and we go back to the Scott Parker conversation, who do we see back there? Do we see Heineman and LVC? Do we see a mixture of our younger lads with Scott Parker kind of coming in and out? Because I think if we do start playing LVC more deep, in a more deep central position, you're definitely going to see a lot less of Parker. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic that Kit does have to get right, because there's no more honeymoon period for him. If we start off poorly, Kit's going to get sacked. I mean, he's had his chance, and this is his full season to build his team. So this team really needs to come out, and he needs to get that rhythm right, because if he doesn't, I don't know how long he'll last. I hope he does well, and I'm sure we'll talk about another show eventually down the road, but he does need to get it right, and it starts probably with centering around LVC, if anybody in the midfield.
Listen, it's a very good point, and that's why I wanted to talk about this, and I go back to something that Mike Gregg said. It's about having a defined role. You know, again, Mike, I'm paraphrasing a little bit what you're talking about with LVC, but he needs a defined role. We need to know what position he is going to be for the majority of the time. He needs to know it. He needs to make it his own. And not as much moving around. If you need to move the pieces around every once in a while, so be it. But everyone should have a defined role. And that's up to Kit to figure out how all these pieces fit. And we're naming names. And like Greg mentioned also, Emerson Heineman, he's got to be part of the mix. And that's what makes this interesting, and that's what makes preseason crucial. He has to get it right then. He needs to find what role everyone plays best and play them in that role. And the LVC situation is fascinating because, again, I wasn't really thinking about it until I watched him in the under-21s and thinking, maybe this is the role for him. So, again, we'll have to see how this all plays out. But, guys, let's move on, and Mike Gregg will go back to you. Again, we do have some other Fulham news, because on Monday, Fulham announced that goalkeeper Martin Stekelenburg will be joining Southampton on a season-long loan. What are your thoughts about Stekelenburg moving back to the Premier League?
Well, I was disappointed that we haven't been able to sell him, but it's clear that with 2 years left on his contract and he's on a decent wage, that no one's willing to gamble actually buy him. So the only bonus we've got really is we've got him off the wage bill. My understanding is that 60% of his wages are being paid by Southampton, plus we've got a fee. So it's a bonus that he's off our wage bill. Hopefully get some games, and come the end of the season, Southampton want to give us some money for him next year, whatever league we're in. But it's just been a disaster from day one for him. I do feel sorry for him. You know, World Cup finalist, but it's just not worked out for either party. And we're going to have these same conversations next year. Will anyone want to buy him? But it saves us money. We can use that elsewhere, and so that's a bonus.
Very good take there. Mike O'Connor, what are your thoughts about Stekelenburg's move?
Not to be rude or curt, but I mean, you know, good riddance to the guy. I mean, I'm not saying he was useless for us, but we really don't have a place for him. I mean, you've already got Bett, now we've got Lonergan, so I don't really see the need for Stekelenburg anymore, especially with how much we've been paying him. So if he can go to the Premier League and he can get some game time and he can kind of fit his own, you know, what he wants to do, we can get him off our wage bill and that money spent other ways to maybe entice Roberts to stay longer. We can pay Roberts a little more, something like that. Just throwing it out there. Great. I don't see where Stekelenburg fits for us. Unfortunately, I mean, I still rate him. At least I did for a long time. I think he still has a good goalkeeper, but just it worked out for us. And there's not much more I can say, but, you know, thank you very much for what you've done. Get off our wage bill, and I will see you later.
Okay. Very interesting take. Giannis, I'm going to turn it over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this. I have to jump off for just about 30 seconds, okay? Can you share your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. On the other hand, I don't apologize for being rude. He would come third in a two-horse race. He didn't recover really from that game against Sunderland when Jose Altidore clocked him. And, you know, I agree that maybe we should have got a fee. But that probably tells you how much his stock is worth at the moment. He's probably worth as much as an Oxo Cube stock. That's about the extent of it. So we take him off our wage bill, which is fine. It frees up some money maybe to bring someone else in, and that's okay. And Mike's absolutely right. At the end of the year, we're going to have the same sorry conversation about where Stekelenburg is going to be, unless of course we get promoted. And all of a sudden, he might want to play for us, in which case I'd still say, show him the door. So, Russ, are you there? Oh, so Russ has gone. So, okay, this might be a really good chance to sing a song. What do you think, boys?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay, so what should we sing? Not I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. Oh, Russ, you're back.
I am back. Sorry, guys. I had a little Brady emergency that I needed to take care of. Sorry about that.
It's all good. We're about to sing.
All right, guys. Let's move on from our talk there. Let's talk about world transfer speculation. And, Mike Gregg, I'm going to start with you because you actually talked a little bit about this already during the show. And I actually just saw this today. Again, I was waiting for some more pertinent speculation, and this was actually on the 72.co.uk website this morning, and it was Fulham bid for Wolves McDonald. Fulham have put in a £1 million bid for Wolves midfielder Kevin McDonald, according to Sky sources. Mike, would you like to see Kevin McDonald at Fulham?
Yes, he fits that bill that we were talking about, that central midfielder. I don't believe the £1 million fee. We wouldn't embarrass ourselves by offering that.
I agree.
But he fits all the criteria that we're looking at. Championship player, experienced, and in the right age range. And, yes, I hope we can get him because he is one of the best passers in the league. And if we were to get him, then, yes, you have real question marks over not only Parker, but I would say Tunnicliffe as well, you know, and certainly Tunnicliffe's future, because you could see Parker staying as our old head, but with three midfielders coming in, I would be very surprised if he's coming around, really. He's exactly what we want. I hope we pursue that, and we get him, because that, for me, would be the midfield sorted, and then we'd have to move on to the other areas where we feel we need to improve or, you know, get other players in. So, yeah, very happy to be linked with him, and, yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And Mike, to be honest with you, I agree with you 100%. If that's the bid, they're not going to get the player. They need to up that bid. I'm not buying that amount. I think they know that they would need a higher bid on that. Giannis, what are your thoughts about this player?
This would be a really good signing. This would be a really good signing, and Mike's absolutely right, because it would call into question the status of Tunnicliffe. But, of course, there's also the rumours about Jamie O'Hara.
Yes.
And if you bought McDonald and O'Hara in, I think then you really do start to look at not just Tunnicliffe, but Parker as well. And what excites me about that is, in a sense, and no disrespect to Parker, but really the key to us getting re-promoted is going to be the key to the midfield. It's got to be the midfield. I mean, we know our back four was Titanic-like, but we didn't have enough strength in breadth. We didn't have enough strength in depth in the middle of the park. And all of a sudden, we have the potential to be overloaded. Well, I'd rather have too many than too few, because it means there's a lot of competition for places. And it also may mean that players, as much as I don't want to lose him, but someone like Kaká may actually be dispensable. And don't forget, we've also got Brian Ruiz, who's technically, even though we've signed him up for another year, is still on the market. So if we can get him, McDonald, he's a super passer of a ball. And if O'Hara, and the rumours are true that O'Hara might be out there as well, we had the potential to have a very, very scary-looking midfield this year. And that excites me, for sure. So the McDonald one I'd take in a heartbeat. And as I said, if O'Hara pops up and we have the potential to get him, I'd get him as well.
Okay, very interesting take there, Giannis. And Michael Connor, over to you. And, you know, again, just to continue our conversation here, it's obvious to me that Fulham are really emphasizing basically upgrading the midfield as a key. As Giannis said, I believe it is a key for promotion. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it absolutely. The midfield is that transition area where if you do have a Titanic back four like we had last season, if you have a solid midfield that can also do defensive duties, then you've kind of shored up at least a part of your problem in defense, because if they need to, they can track back and be good defenders. Whereas on the other side, if you're in the attacking mode and you're going forward, if you're just relying on your strikers, and as we kind of did, you kind of limit yourself. You basically have one arm in the fight. But if you have a transitioning midfield that can then go in the attack, which is what looks like we're doing, we're building a very scary, very strong midfield, as Giannis puts it, then you've kind of fixed a little bit of both of the problems, kind of killed, you know, two birds with one stone there, because these players can not only go on the attack and help out Ross, Taggart, and Smith, but they can also go back and help Burn, Hutch, and Kavanaugh in the back. So I think the key is your midfield, and there's a reason why the midfield is our central component within the team. They may not get all the glory all the time, but those guys, if we can build a solid midfield, I think we really fix a lot of our problems, especially if you get defensive midfield-minded players who can track back, and you also get attacking-minded midfielders who can go forward. You get a good mix of those, and you kind of fix a little bit both of your problems. So I think the midfield is where we start, and then we quickly need to transition into fixing our defense. Our strikers are the part that least worries me coming into this new season.
Okay, yeah. Very interesting take on the situation in midfield. We've just basically been talking about that the majority of the show, but I find it interesting. Again, we're going to talk about the article that Richard Allen wrote that kind of plays to what we're talking about. You know, again, the whole situation with creating scoring chances, and it sounds like Fulham are really putting an emphasis on trying to revamp that, which I think is a very good thing. All right, guys. Mike Gregg, I'm going to go right back to you because you talked about this player as well. Again, here's another story to the saga of Pat Roberts. This actually came online right before we started the show from the Daily Mail. I'm going to read it to you when I get your thoughts on it.
Don't do it.
Is right on the Daily Mail. Manchester City could send Patrick Roberts out on loan to Europe when he completes £10 million move from Fulham. Patrick Roberts set to complete move to Manchester City within 2 weeks. Roberts looks sent abroad on loan in order to continue his development. City look set to complete a move for Roberts for around £10 million. This is from Joe Bernstein from Mail Online Daily Mail. Mike Gregg, what are your thoughts about all this? Again, this has been going back and forth for the longest time. You mentioned you want Fulham to hold on to him. What happens if he goes?
Well, certainly, I think the vast majority of fans want to keep hold of him, but in the end, if he's not willing to sign a contract, then we need to get the best deal. And if City's is going to be in the £10 million figure, then we have to trust the club, I suppose, to, you know, take that and use the funds. And Pat Roberts can kiss goodbye to playing any Premier League football or any first-team football in the UK for probably the next 3 or 4 years, can't he? You know, so you need, it's important. We all love the youngsters. I want them to all do well. I want a team full of them coming from the academy. In the end, if they don't want to be there, just as Brian Reeves doesn't want to be here, then you ship him out. And you have to be as cold as that. You know, I want him to play for Fulham. But if he doesn't want to, then go. Go. It'd be disappointing never to see him in a white shirt again and see all his potential. But more importantly, to us at the moment, is getting £10 million in and spending that wisely and getting promoted and getting the riches of the Premier League at the end of next season.
No, listen, it's a very good point. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I think we all want him to be a Fulham Football Club, but you bring up a valuable point. If for some reason Pat Roberts wants to move on, he can move on. We've already talked, Mike, on a prior show, the grass isn't always greener. I think he'll learn a very hard lesson if he does do this. He could be hurting himself if he decides to leave. I think he's better off staying at Fulham. But if he wants to leave, then Fulham need to do what's best for Fulham. So, again, this is just speculation. This has been going on for the longest time, but we keep seeing speculation with Pat Roberts and Man City. And, Giannis, I know you are very fond of this player, but if you are Shad Khan, if you are Mike Rigg, what do you do if, say, the player wants to leave?
Well, you sell him. I mean, from a business perspective, if you're going to make $10 million out of this, I think I mentioned the Chris Small. I mean, the different players, obviously. Chris Smalling, I've said, yeah. I think it's stiff. But Patrick Roberts, if you're going to get $10 million, that's fine. And you're absolutely right, because, I mean, he's going to kiss goodbye to first-team football in England for the next 3 or 4 years. But if I'm looking at Patrick Roberts, if I'm thinking from the perspective of him as a kid, I'm thinking I'm playing on a team that finished 17th in the Championship and I couldn't get any playing time. So what the heck am I doing here? So if Man City are going to pick me up and they send me to Belgium to play for, you know, Standard Liège for 4 years, I'm still playing. Because at the end of the day, what do these kids want? They want to play. They don't want to be training 6 days a week just to sit and park their ass on a bench for 90 minutes. So in that sense, I don't blame him. I don't blame. I'm upset about it because I want us to keep him. If he doesn't want to be here, he should be let go. But we didn't treat him well last year. You got to look back to the way Kit utilized him or underutilized him. But would I take the money and run? Yes, I would. But I think, again, I'm pointing the finger straight at Kit, because there were times last year he could have brought him onto the bench, given him valuable experience. And it's all about confidence as well, confidence building. And as a 17-year-old, you're sitting there going, what have I got to do to get on the pitch? So he wants to play. At the end of the day, he wants to play with us. And if it means he can go to a club where he's shipped out, where he can play football, then I say we take the deal, we take the money and run, and we wish Pat all the best of success in the future moving forward.
No, very interesting take there, Giannis. And again, because it's a difficult situation for him, and he's in the last year of his deal. So you have to think of it as a business. What do you do if he's not willing to sign a new deal? You have to figure out what you're going to do with him. You don't want him to leave on a free. So, again, you need to think about what's best for Fulham Football Club. And if that means getting the most that you can for him, then that's what you might have to do. But Michael Connor, I'm going to go back to you, because, again, we've talked a great deal about the situation with Pat Roberts. Giannis brings up a very good point. He didn't play much last season under Kidd and also under McGath. I mean, he really didn't play that much. You know, if you're Pat Roberts, what do you do? You know, again, I'm going to put you in his shoes. What do you think is going through his mind?
You know, okay, if I'm going from his perspective, if I was as good as this kid was at the game and I have all this potential and I'm not playing at all, and then you've got Manchester City coming in willing to spend $10 million on you as a 17-year-old and then willing to send you off to another foreign country to go play, that is too enticing of an offer to turn down if I'm him. I could play in the Championship and get some game time, or like last season, sit on the bench, or I can get paid all this money from a Premier League team to go play in Belgium, for example, if you go with Giannis as well. It's kind of too enticing of an offer for Pat Roberts to turn down, since he hasn't been getting the game time with Fulham. So do I really blame the guy? Not at all. Not one bit. The finger does have to get pointed back at our own management and ask them, you know, we build all these great academy players. We have all these wonderful young guys coming through our ranks. But if all we're going to do is not play them and then sell them off or loan them away, what's the point of our academy, and what's the point of trying to build for the future if the only thing we do is sell our future for $10 million? So it's kind of a bittersweet result, really, because if we get $10 million for him, that's a nice chunk of change that makes up for the Mitroglou fiasco, and we can get rid of him and kind of recoup something. but are you really recouping anything? Because if Pat Roberts stays with us and ends up being an absolute genius on the ball and just becomes a phenomenal player, then you've just really lost out. So it's really a sad time for Fulham if we do let Pat Roberts go. But I completely agree with Mike Gregg, where if he doesn't want to sign a contract, you're not just going to change his mind. You take how much you can get for him, and you kind of bid adieu and say thank you for your services. Sorry, it didn't work out. And at the same time, I don't mean to waste any more time on the topic, but I do want to ask all three of you a quick question, and where you think George Williams, Thomas Eisfeld, and Chris David kind of fall into our future plans, because they're all out on loan right now, and it's easy to forget
about. Well, Chris David's gone, Mike. Chris David has been let go by Fulham.
Yeah, he's gone.
Okay. I missed that one because the Fulham website still has him on the team, which is what surprised me, have him out on loan. So that surprised me. But then Thomas Eisfeld, I know, is still ours, and I know that George Williams is still ours as well. And I don't know where they're going to fall into the mix, being young guys coming up through our team.
Very, very interesting question. I'll go to you first, Mike Gregg.
Well, Eisfeld was... he made a comment during the week about he's in limbo, really. He doesn't really see where he's going to fit in. He's gone back to training last week. They've had a week off, and then they're back this week again. And it'll be interesting to see what he does. I suspect he will manufacture a move out again somewhere, which is a pity because he obviously has some kind of potential and skill. It would be nice to see him. But, you know, we're talking about where do we fit all these other players in. So... yeah, I think he'll be one of the casualties. I think it's all looking back to, you know, McGaff signings and a little bit of a, you know, two camp type thing, and he'll be gone. And what was the other name? Sorry,
George Williams.
George Williams.
Well, George. Yeah, I mean he's getting back from his injury, and I would expect him probably to go out on loan initially for a month or two to get his fitness, because he's going to miss the beginning of the season. So that would make sense, back down to League One possibly. But I can see him certainly towards Christmas onwards. He's the natural wingers we have are Williams and Kaká.
That's right.
You know, if Roberts goes, and I'm sure they're going to have plenty of game time. Williams is going to be it's going to be an interesting case. There's the Welsh connection, obviously, so he knows a lot about him and he's brought him through. And I think alone, initially, just to get his match fitness up, because he's going to miss the pre-season games. So, yeah, that's where I see it going for him.
Mike, before I go over to Giannis, I see George Williams down the road as being very valuable. You know, again, we've been talking about wingers, and you just mentioned Kaká and himself. If they want to play a certain style that we hope that they're going to play, I think George could be a huge part of that, Mike.
I think both of them can play, are both ideally suited for us playing sort of three central midfielders and two wide men. Both can cut in. And I know George has been watching videos of all the best wingers, trying to improve his game while he's, you know, he's had all this time off. And so hopefully we'll see what he's learnt and... you know, the dedication that he's put in to get fit, because I think he's a little bit ahead of schedule. So, he's going to be an important part, hopefully, of the team over certainly the second half of the season.
Right, because he's going to have to get back to fitness. But I'm trying to see where his role is, Mike, and I could see him having an integral part if he can get back to full fitness. And again, this is all going on the preface that Fulham changed a little bit how they're playing, play the way that we hope that they're going to be playing, because I could see him being very valuable if Kit decides he's going to play this way. I could see George Williams, like you said, in the second half of the season, playing a pretty significant role here. Yes, what are your thoughts about George Williams and potentially Thomas Eisfeld?
The George Williams one, I absolutely agree. I certainly think he's got a role to play in the future. He's an exciting young player, and you know, you talk about the Welsh connection, and he's something. When the pitches start getting heavy around November, December, his mobility and his intelligence is going to help. Thomas Eisfeld is a really tough one, because Eisfeld, I think, is a good player, and he's one of the players that's been forgotten in this squad. And I'm hoping that Kit really does a good job in terms of reevaluating players, forgets what happened last year in many ways and says, okay, I felt your back. Let's see what you've got. Let's see where you fit into our plans. Is there a role for him to play moving forward? And if not, you know, don't screw about with the kid. Let him go. Find him a home. Don't park his ass on the reserve bench. So with Eisfeld, I know you said I read that same report. He said he feels like he's in limbo. But I'm really hoping that Kit and the coaching staff take a look at him because I actually think he's a good player. And it's been unfortunate the way he was treated last year. So hopefully they'll look at him again and then make the evaluation that if he's good enough to stay, we should keep him and use him in a particular role. And if not, let him go to another home.
Okay, very interesting take. And Mike O'Connor, to answer your question, I'm pretty high on George Williams. And I'm just disappointed how the whole situation with Thomas Eisfeld ended up. And yeah, I think that he's a talent. I just don't think that he was able to show it under McGath. And then next thing you know, he's gone. So again, I wouldn't give up on him, but if he does not have a role, he could be moving on. Those are my thoughts on that. Giannis, I know that you have to go very soon, can I give you a couple more pieces of speculation to get your thoughts on?
Russ, I'm good for a little while longer here, so
okay. Okay, well, then I'll go right back to you. I want to talk about two other pieces of speculation, then we're going to move on. And it involves defenders. I'm going to give them both to you. According to Heroes of City a few days ago, former pursuing 22-year-old Brentford defender James Tarkowski. And then also, hamien.com on Tuesday had a link with Manchester United Reece James. He's 21 years old, and he's a fullback. What are your thoughts about Fulham being linked to both of these defenders?
Well, Tarkowski, we talked about the last show, last weekend show, and he would be a good pickup. He's obviously not happy there. He's not happy that Warburton's left. So he's someone, I mean, look, let's be honest, our fullbacks, you know, need revamping. And, of course, our friend Fernando Morbieta got himself sent off yet again in the week. I mean, the lad's got a season ticket with the disciplinary office. I mean, he's not going to learn, is he? So it would be an interesting pickup. I mean, are Brentford willing to do a deal with their little friend east on the M4? I'm not so sure. But if the price is good enough, I'm sure they'll go for it. As for Reece James, I say categorically not. We've got, you know, I know we need fullbacks, yes, but he's only 21. You know, they sent him out on loan to Rotherham last year and Huddersfield Town, and he only played 12 games. So I'm not really sure, unless you're going to stick him in the academy, what would be the value of actually bringing him here. And we do have players in the academy who are developing. You wouldn't bring Reece James in to start as a defender in our starting 11. So I'd hope that that would be a no, and maybe we're looking for a little bit more experience to start the season.
Okay, very interesting take there, Giannis. Mike Gregg, what are your thoughts on these two players?
Well, I agree with Giannis on Reece James. Makes no sense, really, when we've got Kavanagh and when you look at the other fullback position, Grimmer. So you've got two young players. I don't see the point of loaning in more young players, and I've said that on previous shows that I prefer experienced players if they're going to come in and replace them, or at least give them competition. So, but if you look at the squad, we definitely need to bring in a left-back and a right-back, be them starters or you know, back-up for these guys. And so, and then for the centre-back, Brentford have quoted, I think it's $8 million. Yeah, well, then they can whistle Dixie for that one. That's not going to happen. 22, though. 22, and one of the best defenders again in the league. So you can certainly see why we're targeting him. Well, we'll have to go back, but I'm not so sure Brentford are going to let him go. They've let the manager go. They're rebuilding in their own style, and I think he ticks all their boxes, and I know he's unhappy Warburton's left, but I think to prize him away, we'd probably have to spend another 3 or 4 maybe, and is he worth 3 or 4? Could we look at a Premier League experienced defender for that? I think we possibly could. So yeah, it's a tricky one, but there's no way we're paying $8 million.
No. No, that's a joke. That's a joke. I saw that too, Mike. And I was like, that's not going to happen. Mike O'Connor, what are your thoughts about these two players?
I would definitely take James Tarkowski, but for $8 million, like everyone else has said, you know, you can just keep on walking, you know, turn out the lights behind you, please, because we don't, that's too much money. You're looking at spending all the money potentially you sell Pat Roberts, we just talked about, almost on this young man, and I'm sorry, there's no comparison between the two of them, in my opinion, so no, your $8 million is way too overpriced, and I think it's simply a price tag they put on him to kind of put off potential suitors for his services like that, so no, I absolutely don't think we should pay $8 million. However, age 22, I mean, English players in English leagues tend to be a little overinflated when it comes to price, but I do think that he is a very talented, very, very professional young man who has a bright future ahead of him so long as our injuries don't happen to him. So if we can snag Tarkowski for a decent price, much less than $8 million, but we can snag him, I will take him. Absolutely. As for Reese, I really don't know too much about Reese James. I can't speak intelligently on the young man. I just know that he's never played for United, being so young, being, 21 years of age. He's been loaned out to Carlisle, United, Rotherham, and Huddersfield. So he's got some experience with some lower leagues, some more of the tougher hitting leagues. So he could potentially be an asset, especially if we build him up with potential. But I can't speak too much on him. But Tarkowski I would definitely take and would love it to be true just for the right price.
Right, and I totally agree with that. The price has to be right. And if the price isn't right, then you find someone else. You know, again, the £8 million is a joke. That's not going to happen. If the price was right, I'd be interested in Tarkowski. I'm not interested in the other player for the reasons you guys have all been talking about. All right, guys, let's move on. And one segment I've decided to add, again, Emilio Danelle started a little while back, was a little Conch Talk co-host Q&A where I do a post on the Facebook page and some fans ask questions of you guys. And Mike Gregg, the first one goes to you. This is for you, Mike. Okay, this comes from our friend Roger Lewis, who's listening. He just turned 70, so happy birthday, Roger. I believe it was just either yesterday or the day before. Again, very happy birthday, Roger. So, Mike, this is really for you. Do you think we will really sell Ruiz, Mitroglou, and Amor Bieta? Why is Mike so anti-Smith? I thought it was a breath of fresh air and gives us so many more options. Is not just using the long ball that many think. He scores with both feet as well as with his head. He gives any central defender a tour of time. Now listen, you've been a little bit critical, Mike, of Mr. Matt Smith. So what are your thoughts about the question from Mr. Roger Lewis?
Okay, let's just clear this up about Smith, yeah? Because I get a lot of abuse on Friends of Finland. I have never said he is a rubbish player or anything like that. I think his touch is that of a brick wall, that's true. But, yes, he causes problems and, you know, he scores some useful goals. But up close and personal, when you're watching him, he is so unfit. If he starts a game, you know, 60 minutes, he's struggling really big time. But my main issue with a tall man, and I've never liked strikers like Crouch and all that, is because essentially footballers will take the easy option. And so they see a big man, and the defenders will just think, oh, I can't get it to the right winger or the left winger or to my midfielder. I'll just lump it forward and big Matt will get on the end of it, hopefully. And we saw that from Hutchison, we saw it from Richards, an awful lot when they were playing all in the same team. And I just think it makes for ugly football. And now, you could argue, play with proper wingers, get down, get crosses in, that kind of thing. Yes, that's fine, and that works. But I just think it brings out a base instinct in a player that easy option, bang, long ball. And so it's nothing against Smith per se, it's just what he brings out of the other players by accident, if you like. So nothing against him.
Okay.
But personally, I think we need pace up front. With him and Ross in the team, there is no pace there up front at all. So, you know, yeah, I'm not a great fan, but I've never, ever slagged him off in any kind of, you know, personal way. As for the other players, Amberetta, Ruiz and Mitroglou, will we sell them? I was hoping we'd sell Steckenberg, so I worry that because these guys are on, you know, decent wages, and although Ruiz is only on another year contract, we're not going to get anywhere near the what their real value is. So it's a case of, do we loan them out again for another year? You know, you look at those, we should be picking up 10, 12 million for these kind of these four players. We're going to be lucky now probably to pick up four or five, if that, and maybe a million out of the loan fee. So Ambrett is a liability. Mitroglou, we don't know about, really, let's be honest. But, you know, again, Mike said about Steckenberg, let's just move him on, forget about him. You want to do that with him as well. And Ruiz, he doesn't want to be here either. So are they going to be gone by the end of August? I hope so, and I hope on a permanent move.
Okay, very, very good there, Mr. Gregg. Okay, we have one more question. And, Giannis, I'm going to give it to you. I think this is right up your alley, so that's the reason why I'm going to go to you with this. This is from Will Johns. The club has made a good start to the offseason. To what extent is this down to Mike Riggs' influence rather than Kit? Giannis.
Good question. I don't think I can answer it because we're not really sure what on earth is going on behind the scenes. I mean, you know, Riggs should be part of it, but, you know, Khan's going to have some say. Obviously, he's the owner. Is Alistair McIntosh part of that as well? I know that one of the things that was raised is, you know, that the notion about the analytical approach to recruitment, and whether you look at past statistics and on basis of that, do you sign certain players? I mean, if that was the case, we'd put bids in for Messi, Neymar, and Ronaldo. But I don't. I'm not so sure yet. I it's still early. It's still early to. Too early to tell. The one thing that we have seen here is that the players we've brought in are young, they're fit, they're exuberant, and they're energy players. And if the defenders that we bring in and maybe potential strikers are very much of the same mold, then I think you're going to start to see that the philosophy is pointing in a certain direction. Because if you asked me right now what sort of player Kit wants, I think he's more likely to tell you what he's having for dinner tonight than knowing what player he wants. I don't think he knows. Whereas Rick may have an idea in terms of the infrastructure he wants and the sort of player he needs. And if he's been smart, he's looked at the clubs that went up this last year and said, okay, let's take a look at Bournemouth. How were they able to do it, really, with a no-name squad? And maybe use that model and sort of tweaked it a little bit in relation to the squad that we have now, and hopefully bring the sort of players he wants. I need to see more signings. So the answer is I need to see more signings to see if this has Mike Riggs' stamp all over it. But you know what? I'd rather have his stamp than Kit's stamp, because if we're talking about stamps, Mike Riggs would be a first-class stamp. And Kit Simons would be a seventh-class pony stamp. So... I'd take Mike's approach any day.
Okay. I had a feeling you would like that question there, Giannis. Very, very interesting take, as always, my friend. All right, let's go into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. And, Giannis, you've kind of set that up because we are going to be talking about analytics. And I read this very interesting article on Craven Cottage News Round by Richard Allen. Richard Allen's been on the show last year, I believe.
Yeah.
Talking about his book, about Roy Hodgson, great book. I would recommend you getting that. And Michael Connor, I'm going to go to you first. Again, we're talking about the Richard Allen article. It has a very interesting post in regards to Fulham possibly using an analytic approach to recruitment for this season. If you were Fulham Chief Football Officer Mike Riggs, Michael Connor, how much of a factor would you put on a statistical analysis of a player when deciding who comes to Fulham Football Club?
I mean, I would hope to think that a majority of, coaches or anyone in Mike Riggs' position, I know he's not a coach, but he is the chief football officer there for recruiting. I would like to think that they all dive deep into statistics, because there's a lot of things you can tell from analyzing players and trends. And one thing that Mike Riggs apparently has done very well so far, and if you look into his past, one thing he does very well is he picks up on trends from players or teams and can tell, based off of this squad of players, and these statistics, which of these players are the linchpins? Which of these players are the heart and the beating soul of these teams? So if I was Mike Rigg and if I was looking at this and looking to recruit players to Fulham, you don't just take the players that make the headlines. You don't just take the players that score the goals and everyone loves. You look at those players who make the key passes, who make the key tackles, who are always involved in the background, in the building up of plays and the winning of matches. It's not always the one who strikes the ball that wins the game. Rather, it's the player that can take the ball down and envision where his own teammates and players are going and making those essential passes. And that's one thing I think that made people like Danny Murphy and Scott Parker extremely effective and extremely essential to teams, is because of that ability to see things build before they actually happen. So when Mike Rigg or someone of that nature is looking at an analytical approach to bringing players into a club, like I said, you don't just look for the Ross McCormack, although he is a phenomenal player. You need to look at the guys behind the scenes who build up to that. And by using an analytical approach and really kind of breaking down what this player does for his team and how effective is he at doing so, you can start building a team rather than a team of stars. You have a functioning unit. So I think that's extremely important, and I'm really hoping that's something that he's using when we're pinpointing these players we want to bring to Fulham Football Club.
Very interesting look at that, Mr. O'Connor. And Mr. Gregg, I'm now going to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on what Mike O'Connor just shared. And, you know, again, I read this article. I found it interesting, you know, again, because Richard Allen was really focusing on players that Fulham are potentially looking at that are creators. You know, again, trying to get players that were high in the statistics of creating chances last season. And I find it fascinating. So I'm going to ask you, you like stats. Would this be something that you would be looking at?
Well, Richard is very good with his stats, and actually, by coincidence, I went to a football and data seminar this week, where it was presented about what's happening within football, future trends, you know, all about stats, video, and analysis, and it's all about putting these kind of figures in context, and which is exactly what Mike just said. You know, it's okay looking at. You know, this person had 40 shots last year and scored 20 goals. He must be brilliant. But it doesn't always work out like that. So it's who gave him the ball sometimes. So it's something that the club... I'll go back to the... It's something that the club are doing. You know, Tony Khan runs his analysis company with the Jaguars. And they also do work for Fulham. Although people are quite... scary and paranoid that he's picking every player. But I think the good thing to look at is if you look at, for example, whoscored.com, you look at those stats,
yes.
And you look at Pringle, and you look at Kenny, you look at McDonald, you look at O'Hara, and they're all there at the top. The one difference is, what are most of the fans saying? I saw that player play last year, and he played well against me. So it's not just about looking at cold numbers, it's realising that Pringle stood out as the best player in both the games we played against Rotherham, but McDonald ran the game when he was against us with Wolves. So O'Hara, despite being in a rubbish Blackpool team, was the standout player, and his stats are quite amazing, really. So I don't think you can build... It'd be interesting to see what happens with Brentford, because they are going down the recruitment route and picking of teams pretty much stats-based, so it's going to be a really interesting experiment. But, you know, I don't think we're that far. We're certainly not that far down the road, but it's a combination of factors. Again, I've seen on the message boards today, who's picking these players? And Yanis said, you know, it's not Kit and it's Rigg, and some people are, you know, getting mixed up. It's a combination, isn't it? It's Rigg will pick up players, the scouts will mention players, Kit will have his own people... And all together, they will go down the route of saying, right, yes, this is a player we will go for. I don't believe, you know, having been in conversation with, certainly with Mike Rigg, that you know, it's one man picking all these players. That's not happening. It's a group, it's the coaches and everyone involved. But they use the analysis. We've got a great analysis team at the club. And one of the things I will just say is that out of the seminar, there was a question and answer session, and it was, what's the trends within football, who's ahead, you know, in baseball, Moneyball started and then everyone did it, and it's going to happen in football. But those who have taken it on now, and especially, and it was said, especially the ones with owners from America who have gone down that route. Yes, Liverpool made mistakes a couple of years ago. They probably still are making mistakes, but the clubs who have bought into it early, and we are one of them, are the ones who are going to bear fruit of everything. And hopefully we're seeing a progression. We're picking players who are the best players in the Championship last year and who played well against us, and that's a key point. So I'm very happy with the way we're going, and, you know, stats are an important tool in bringing these players in. But it's not the only tool.
Okay, yeah. Very interesting take. You know, and, Mike, I totally agree with you on that. I'm glad that you brought this up. I think it's a tool. I think it's part of the puzzle. I don't think it's the entire puzzle. It sounds like Brentford are going to be going through analytics as most of the puzzle. You know, that's what they're going to be using. It sounds like this is just a tool and one piece. And I'm all for that. And yeah, Liverpool made many mistakes, and they continue to make mistakes. I watch it from here because, you know, again, FSG are based here, and I get to watch all the mistakes. But again, they're also learning from their mistakes. But when it gets to Fulham, I see analytics as a piece of the puzzle. And, Giannis, I want to get your thoughts on this. As a coach, wouldn't you use analytics and also other opinions, other people, to help you make an opinion, an overall view of a player?
That plays a part for sure, Russ. But for me, I think the biggest thing has to be your own eyes. I mean, one of the things is going out, you know, before you're thinking of buying players, you're looking and you're sending your scouts out, the advanced scouts. So it's not just the advanced scouts in terms of watching teams, but watching individual players. Then, of course, you go out there and you watch what they do on the ball, off the ball, energy. I like to go in 10-minute increments. What are they like at the 10-minute mark versus the 90-minute mark? And there's also a feel about a player, the body language, communication with teammates. These are the unwritten rules. I mean, you just, in any good team, it just requires one toxic element to ruin it for everybody else. So I think it's all part of the whole package. And if I'm looking to recruit a player, it's funny, you know, I mean, the number of NCAA coaches that have called me about players for scholarships, the first question they always ask me is, tell me about the kid. Is he or she coachable? And that, to me, I think is critical. Is it someone who is a team player, someone who's adaptable, someone who'll be on time for practice every game, for every game of practice on time, comes prepared, rolls their sleeves up? These are the players that won't necessarily show up in terms of the statistics, but you can see them with their own eyes in terms of their commitment. And it's that sort of commitment we're going to need to get out of this division. Not the show up when I want, look lazy up front, or whatever you're going to do. So I think statistics play a part, but I think your own set of eyes are absolutely crucial in terms of determining whether you're going to bring a certain player in or not.
No, again, you're looking at it as a coach. That's why I'm glad that you could share your thoughts, because attitude, coachability is a factor here as well. So it's not just the raw data. And that's why, again, I understand where Brentford are headed on this. I don't know if it's going to work. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You're following trends. We're all talking about following trends. But there's a human element. And, Giannis, you just brought that up. You know, are you coachable? You know, what's your attitude? You know, what are you going to bring? Are you a team player? All those factors, along with the analytics, I think, work together for me to make a decision. You know, okay, you know, and that's why when I saw this from Richard, I thought it was very interesting and fascinating. I just wanted it to be, I hope it's just a piece of the puzzle. And, Mike Gregg, that's what you said. You know, you believe that it is a piece of the puzzle, and that's all I hope it is. And you also mentioned that you believe that this is a group decision, Mike Gregg. When they're deciding on players, you don't think that it's just rigged, right? You think that they all talk about it before they make a decision. Is that where you were going on that, Mike?
Yeah, the for example, let's say this, you know, Tony Khan's team come up with a player, they will put that to Rig. Rig will put it to Kit, they discuss it, and then they make a decision. And then Rig's had his job at the FA, which is talent identity. So who's to say he's not seen, you know, Pringle and Tierney before? So they said in a meeting that they would take him, you know, if a player's name comes up, they will look at him, they will look at the stats, they will look at their scouting reports, and take it from there. But the one thing the club, I mean, if you go back to the video, and Kit Simon said that the idea is not to have the club being run by one person and him bringing in just his type of players, because we've had such a turnover, and you see it at so many clubs. You know, you get Sam Allardyce here, go to a club, and he will bring in, first of all, Kevin Nolan, and then other players, and it happens all the time. Whereas we need a bigger, sort of more fluid plan that allows manager to take control. And I think that's key as to why Kit Simons has stayed as manager, because with all the changes in the background, you couldn't see a named manager coming in this summer and accepting what's going on. And so there is no one man in charge. It's a team effort. But
very good point, Mike, and I was just going to say, they're trying to establish an identity. Would that be a way of looking at this?
Yes, that's right. So that any coach who comes in is going to have a good set of players there, and you know, they've been given the tools to get on with their job.
Okay.
But it's not going to be a style dictated by the manager. I can't, you know, throughout the whole squad from the first team down to the under-18s.
Okay, very good. Very, very interesting discussion about this. That's why I'm glad that Richard wrote this, because it really got me thinking, and I'm like, this is a perfect topic for us to talk about, Mike Wright. You still there?
You still there?
Okay, guys.
For a second.
No, not a problem. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left, and what I'd like to do to end the show is talk about biggest need to upgrade. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the thoughts of the Fulham supporters first. You know, I put this on the College Talk Facebook page and put it under College Talk Controversy Roundtable. What position is the biggest need to upgrade as of right now for Fulham Football Club? So I'm just going to share their thoughts and then get your thoughts on it. So let's start with Alfie Fulham Boy Foster. He says back four. Reg Hollis says manager. Jason Birchie says, I think a solid center back pairing and a younger Danny Murphy clone to sit in front. Craig Williams says back four for sure and top quality consistent wingers. Roger Lewis says a complete back four. Grimmer, Hutchinson, Bodaroff, and whoever our left back can all be improved on. Sorry, Mike Greg. I put in sorry, Mike Greg part. Martin Atkins says CEO. Matt Kirk says manager. Marty Ward says defense, then a striker. Will John says left back. Get husband permanently and at least one decent center back. Stuart Roberts said left back, then defensive midfielder, then central defense. Okay, those are the comments on the Cutter Talk Facebook page. I'll start with you, Mike O'Connor. What are your thoughts about that? And for you, what is the biggest need moving forward?
Well, I would say in general, it would be the back four for sure, without a doubt. The defense needs to be shored up. It needs to be fixed. We have too many leaks, too many holes, and we gave up too many soft goals last year. That's been Fulham's crisis for the past 3 or 4 seasons has been our defense, to be honest. So, we really need to fix that as soon as possible once this midfield situation is squared away. And specifically within the defense, I would have to probably say our left and right back, both positions. I don't mind too much our central defenders. I think Bodrov, Hutch, and Byrne do a pretty decent enough job together. I know that Byrne and Hutch have a very close relationship offside the pitch. They're good friends. I think Bodrov's a wall. Granted, can all three be improved upon? Of course. But I think that the left and right back situation has been probably the most detrimental to our team. That's just my opinion. So I think the back four needs to be fixed. And then specifically within that, we need proper left and right back, second play up wide, and they can also make sure they track back properly.
Okay, fantastic. Giannis, over to you. We've got less than 5 minutes, so give me a minute on this, if you would.
Well, I'd like a little bit more depth up front, and that back four is titanic proportions. So I'd keep Grimmer just because. But I mean, we leaked like a sieve last year, and I'm just hoping that depending if the Roberts money does come in, that we really look to make an upgrade there, because I mean we've got a good goalkeeper who saved us in many a game, and we just need more pace. We need to be able to settle it down instead of long ball nonsense. We have to be quicker to read situations. So I'm going to say we need at least four defenders.
Okay.
Two full backs, two centre backs, maybe even a third centre back.
Okay, fantastic. Mike Gregg, I'm going to give you the final word.
Okay, so as things stand now, in order of preference, we need a left back, a centre back, a central midfielder, a defensive central midfielder, I should say.
Okay.
And I would like another top line striker. So I'm quite happy. I think we've got enough centre backs to fight for one place next to one we bring in. Right back, I'm happy with Grimmer. Need maybe a backup, but left back we definitely need someone.
I totally agree.
And I do think we need another top quality striker. It means one or two might have to leave, but go and give Blackburn some more money and make me happy and get Jordan Rhodes.
I'm right there with you. I would definitely try to hit them up on Jordan Rhodes. I don't think that's going to happen, Mike, but I'm there with you on that. Very good take. Listen, real quick, would you be interested? Again, I've heard nothing on this. Why aren't Fulham in for a husband?
I think that's because there is it friend. I think he might be moving, so they need to keep him there.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah, fantastic. All right, guys, let's wrap up the show. Listen, this is an excellent episode of Cottage Talk. You three really brought it today, so thank you so much for doing this with me. Giannis, final word?
Yeah, I think we should bring Darren Bent in at left back.
Okay. I think I'll pass on that.
You know what? It's been once again, I'm going to send my best wishes to David. Mike and Mike, it's been absolutely fantabulous as ever. And it's the World Cup quarterfinals for the women. So it's Canada against England tonight. That should be fun.
It should be. I'm actually going to be watching that. I look forward to that. Michael Connor, final word.
Best wishes to David and his family, as previously said. Thank you all for a wonderful show. And let's not forget, Adam Taggart's going to score 15 goals next season.
Wow. Look at that prediction. Okay, and finally to you, Mr. Gregg, final word.
Again, best wishes to Dave, and we wish him all the best, and hopefully we can all speak to him soon. And Adam Taggart, 15 goals. Which team will that be for?
There you go. I like that. Adam Taggart, 15 goals. All right, guys, we've got a little over a minute left. I, again, just want to thank you guys for just a tremendous show. This was a lot of fun today. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cars Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cars Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for this episode. For the two Mikes and Giannis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cars Talk. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.